Everyone, and welcome to Ask the Horse Live. I'm your host, Haley Pepper, digital managing editor at thehorse.com. Equine colic refers to abdominal pain rather than a single disease and can arise from many causes, ranging from gas buildup to intestinal impaction. Horses with colic might show subtle signs such as reduced appetite or lethargy, or more obvious signs like pawing, flank watching, rolling, or repeatedly getting up and down. Because some types of colic can become life-threatening quickly, recognizing signs early and contacting a veterinarian promptly can improve the horse's outcome. This event is sponsored by Care Credit. To answer your questions, we are joined by expert panelists Dr. Mike Figaro from Mountain Point Equine and Dr. Bianca Rusby with Rood & Riddle. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Dr. Figaro, can you start by telling us a little bit about your background?
Sure. Thank you for inviting us here and look forward to this. I am a University of Penn alumni from back the 1900s, 1997 grad. I did my internship at the University of Guelph. I'm actually a surgeon by training as well, and I went to Purdue University for that. I currently own a three-doctor ambulatory veterinary practice in northern New Jersey.
Thank you. And Dr. Rusby, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah. Thank you for having me. It's good to be here. I'm from Maryland originally and went to University of Kentucky for undergrad and studied animal science. And then I went to Cornell for veterinary school. And after that, I moved back to Lexington, where I completed a rotating hospital internship at Rood & Riddle Equine. And then I stayed on for my surgery residency there. And I'm in my last and final year of residency right now, and I'm finishing up this summer.
Awesome. Before we begin answering questions, I want to remind everyone of our Ask the Horse Live format. We're starting with questions submitted during registration. If you're listening live and would like to submit a question, please do so via the chat window. We'll do our best to get to as many of your questions as possible. If you're listening to the podcast recording of this event and would like to join us live in the future, please visit thehorse.com/askthehorselive to register for notifications. And with that, we're going to jump in. So Dr. Rusby, our first question is for you. It's from Jen in Texas, who asks if you can explain what the term colic actually means.
Sure. So colic is just a generalized term for abdominal pain. And like we've already touched on, it can have many different causes. Most of the time, they are causes that come from a gastrointestinal structure, but they can be other causes within the abdomen, like in the liver or anything like that, that can also cause signs of colic or sometimes even things in the chest. So it's just a generalized term, comes from human medicine like most things do, but we use it in horses to describe abdominal pain.
And Dr. Figaro, Robert in Washington asks if you can explain the different types of colic and which are most common.
Well, number one, probably the most common colic, and it's going to definitely be biased depending on what veterinarian you ask, but in the field and most horses out there, it's most likely a gas colic that typically responds to an anti-inflammatory and moves on. Now, unfortunately, Dr. Rusby and I, being of the surgical persuasion, we see the ones that don't respond to that, and there's a lot of different reasons why horses will have some type of GI-related either an obstruction, an impaction. You've already touched on some of those. Sometimes the intestines get twisted or they get caught in between structures that are normal structures or sometimes abnormal structures. Tumors can create these. Intestines can just flat out get inflamed and not be of the surgical persuasion, but of the medical persuasion. And I think it's really important when talking about this is really saying that it doesn't always have to be GI, and Dr. Rusby already alluded to that. I had a story of a case in my residency where the horse walked off the trailer and we were sure we were going to go right into the OR with it. And as we were walking off the trailer into the treatment room to evaluate the horse, I asked the owner, when did the horse break down his hind suspensories? Because I noticed the felt locks were dropping. And he's like, what are you talking about? And I said, well, this. And I pointed it out to him, and he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. This is the first we're seeing. And that horse presented, that was a musculoskeletal. That horse was acting uncomfortable, and it was because his suspensories were breaking down, she actually. And it kind of looked like a colic type situation. It was wrong. And had I not asked that question, just as a passing comment, I probably would have made a few errors in judgment there. That is not the most common, by the way. That is, I probably will never see that one again.
That's very interesting. Dr. Rusby, Olivia in Florida wants to know how horse owners can recognize common signs of colic in their horse.
Yeah. So sometimes horses will show you some very obvious signs of colic, such as rolling would be kind of the more extreme manifestation of it. And sometimes if you're not actually at the farm when your horse is colicking, you may get to the, well, some people have cameras these days, but you might also get to the farm and see that your horse is really dirty, like maybe they were rolling or and they're also very sweaty. They might be breathing kind of heavy. And then if you have the ability, you can try to take the heart rate, or you can let your veterinarian do that when they get to the clinic. And their heart rate is usually high when they're colicking. Other things you might see are flank watching, pawing, all sorts of things like that. And sometimes when horses are, they can also have kind of mild manifestation of colic where they're just not passing a normal amount or consistency of manure like they usually do. So if your horse is stalled overnight or during the day, it's pretty easy to assess that. Or they're not eating, like their appetite isn't as good as it normally would be, and they're just not acting themselves. So anywhere, you know, anywhere in between some of those mild and more severe signs of colic.
Dr. Pagaro, Jill in Arizona asked what she should do if her horse is colicking before the vet arrives.
And I think all the things that Dr. Rusby just alluded to is kind of use your visual cues and kind of assess the situation and kind of monitor all those signs. I think that's the first thing that you should be doing. I think two other signs that I'm not sure that I heard mentioned was the flamen response where they curl their lip. That is a relatively common one. And one that I typically get in the field is a horse that stretches out like they're going to urinate, like a male horse does. And it could be a female doing that, and they may stay in that position. And a lot of people are concerned that the horse is having a urinary problem. And not that urinary problems don't happen in horses, but they're certainly much more rare than, say, the GI related colic situations that we're seeing. So to answer the question is basically kind of observe your horse, talk to the veterinarian that's coming out and see what they want you to do. Some will ask you to provide some initial treatments. Some will want you to be walking the horse. Some might say, you know, if they want to lay down comfortably, that's fine. But if they're flopping around or thrashing, I don't want you doing that. It's really important if you can get a temperature on them. Don't be surprised that some horses that have fevers will act colicky and they stop eating. They may look colicky, and that's one that it's not a GI problem. It's actually unrelated to it. And then in some cases, just calm the horse, just be there with them. You know, they trust you, usually. And sometimes just being there, comforting them is helpful.
Dr. Rusby, Jamie in Kentucky wants to know if there's anything owners can do to prevent colic in their horses.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's important to know too that a lot of times horses colic and we don't know the reason why. And, you know, people come into the clinic a lot with their horses and they're like, I just don't know why this happened, you know, and they, you know, they feel real bad for their horse and things like that. And nobody wants to end up in the hospital with a colicking horse. So a lot of times the horses just colic. You know, like I had a professor in undergrad that said, you know, when he was teaching us about some large animals, he was like, well, and when God made horses, he done messed up. Because they, and we can get into this a little bit later, but their attachments of their gastrointestinal tract in their abdomen are not as are not as, you know, they're essentially the structures are not as well attached as they are in other animals, which can be a cause for some of the surgical things that we see, some of the surgical reasons for colic. But there are some things that you can do. And making sure your horse always has access to water, which is important in the winter, especially. You can give them salt licks and things like that to encourage them to keep drinking water. Make sure that they have routine dental care so they, you know, that they can adequately chew all of their roughage really well. Get them lots of turnout and just keep their stress low as much as you can. Things like that. So just kind of routine care. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Fergaro, Wendy in Pennsylvania asks if horses who have colicked more before are more likely to colic again, and should we manage these horses differently?
You know, horses are going to make a liar out of you no matter how you look at it, and it's equally frustrating. We definitely seem to have horses that seem to be repeat offenders, and I wouldn't necessarily say that those are the ones that have had previous colic surgeries, but we have certain horses that seem to be more prone to certain conditions like displacing their colon. And again, they'll be repeat offenders. I think the big thing is monitoring and being aware of the tells that those horses have and being astute horsemen. Horsemen and women, I should say, and just kind of pick up those subtle signs long before they become the emergent type situation. Even though the research does not show that environmental changes have a higher predisposition for colic, we definitely see that in the real world. I'm sorry, we just when we have dramatic weather changes, horses are creatures of habit. And when you go from cold to hot or hot to cold in dramatic fashion, we definitely seem to see a higher incidence in reality. I know the research doesn't support that. It's just one of those variabilities. So I typically tell people, make sure they have free access to water during those times. In years past, we used to recommend putting mineral oil in their feed. That's probably not as common to do as much anymore, but maybe doing some type of soaked feeds. And it doesn't even have to be a bran mash, which is also a little bit of an old school type thing. We can simply just take whatever feeds they have and just make it a little bit more liquid. Or cutting back on some of their feed and not having them have a full belly in those times where a little bit higher stress. I'm not saying starve them, but I'm saying find that happy medium.
Dr. Rusby, Maria in Ontario wants to know if temperature changes actually increase the risk of colic in horses, or is this more so just a myth? And if it does, can you tell us why?
Yeah, so I very much agree with everything Dr. Fergaro already said and kind of alluded to. Like, people that have looked at this with research have not really found a slam dunk as to proving that temperature changes actually do increase the incidence of colic or coming up with a reason why. But absolutely, based on clinical experience, it truly does. You just know that if there's a rapid weather change, you're going to have horses coming in, you know, you'll have calls about colic, basically. It does happen, and probably related to the change in barometric pressure, potentially increasing the buildup of gas in the horse's gastrointestinal tract. That's just one kind of theory. Again, nothing has really been proven, but it does. Anytime their environment changes or their routine changes, they could colic, I think. Yeah.
Dr. Fergaro, this is a question that I saw several times. This one's from Miles in Florida, who would like to know if it's okay to allow a horse space to move around and lie down while colicking and waiting for treatment, or if you should try to keep them up and still.
I'm sorry, is this in the trailer or is this in in the barn situation.
The barn, it's the best coming to you.
So I've kind of gone around on this one over the years. I'm not sure that I have the easy answer. I tell people, first of all, it depends on the situation. Like as veterinarians, we're responsible for the safety of the owners there too. And if the horse winds up falling on them, it still winds up being our fault. So that's part of my situation, if I have an owner or handler that knows what they're doing, because it's a very different horse that's stressed out in these colic situations. So that plays one factor in that decision. The other one is how the horse is truly behaving. If the horse is just laying there quietly in what we call sternal, which means on their belly, and they're fine, I'm okay with that. I don't mind that. I'd rather them just be comfortable and find that happy spot. Now, if they're up, lay down, get up, lay down, roll, and doing that, then I probably want you to take them for a walk. And I do think sometimes the distraction of walking certainly helps them. I think it probably does not necessarily relieve the pain. It just gets their mind off something else. So again, there's not a hard and fast rule. It depends on the situation, depends on the horse. I will say that if you do have a thrashing one, I want somebody, walking them or moving them, at least getting them in an open area so they don't get caught somewhere. And that's the other thing. People are not aware of all the variables in their barns and things for them to get themselves hung up on. And now you got a laceration on top of, a colic situation.
Dr. Rusby, Chrissy in New York asked when veterinarians would consider colic surgery for a horse, and in what cases would you say this would be most successful?
Yeah, this is a really great question. So when your horse comes into the hospital, the question of whether or not their colic signs can be treated with medical management or taken to surgery is immediately forefront on our mind. And the reason why that is because many, many studies, almost every study that's looked at outcomes following colic surgery in horses has shown that the earlier that you get to them, the better the prognosis is. And that is just related to when horses have a lesion that needs surgery and their intestines are twisted in some way, you're cutting off the blood supply to the intestines is compromised. And so the longer that goes on, the more damaged the intestines will be, and it increases the likelihood that we will need to resect or surgically remove a piece of intestine. And then there are just more complications and lower survival rate associated with when we do have to remove a piece of intestine. They can still do totally fine after surgery, but they're, that just gets to be a more complicated situation. So certainly the earlier that you can intervene with surgery, the better. And when your horse is hospitalized and we're managing it for colic, we would think about going to surgery is when the horses are painful despite, or painful or continuing to show colic signs despite medical management, which includes Banamine, sedation, and fluids either via the stomach tube or intravenous fluids, those types of things, as well as other treatments depending on what the problem is. And we do take into account what your veterinarian has already done at the farm too, in addition to what we do. And basically that is the main thing that determines whether they need to go to surgery is if they're painful despite medical management.
If I can add on to that, if we have a second, from the field veterinarian perspective on this one, and this is always tough for owners to adopt, but we as veterinarians would like them to be in hospitals much faster than most owners want them to be in hospitals. And there's a reason for that. I would rather you be pissed off at me that I sent them into the hospital and they never did need surgery, because when they need surgery, and if you're in the field with that situation, you're already behind the eight ball, and certainly your prognosis goes down. Plus, everybody's stress level is up a lot higher. So I typically, on my first appointment, when I'm seeing the horse in the field, I'll start talking to him and say, look, if this horse is not looking right, or if I don't feel comfortable with leaving this horse, I'm already talking to him about, do you have a trailer available? Because it never fails. I mean, New Jersey's not a big state, and we have several referral surgical centers in our area, but it's still going to take you 2 hours, 2 to 3 hours hours to get them into the clinic and into that area. Very different than where Dr. Rusby is in Lexington, where they probably bring them in much faster and they have them in there within an hour of the first onset of colic. And your survival rates go exponentially up with something like that.
Dr. Vergara, Lynn in North Carolina wants to know what the average cost of colic surgery and post-op care is.
All right, so that's a loaded question in a lot of ways, but I'll give some numbers there. And it's very area specific, but I wanted to, I did look up some of this stuff to give it, and I'd be curious to see what Dr. Rusby's quotes are. If anybody knows, with major medical insurance, typically most of the policies that are out there, and we can talk about insurance later, they cap out around $7,500. And that number was based upon kind of a national average, specifically for colic surgeries. Unfortunately, that number has changed dramatically over the years, but the insurance number has not changed over the years. So in general, and this goes along in my area of New Jersey, and I don't want to say a national average because I'm not sure that everybody has that number, but for medical colic, you're looking anywhere from probably 5 to 7,000 for medical therapy. And medical therapy is a little bit loaded because I don't know how long that's going to be, but let's say it's 3 to 4 days. That's not an unreasonable number. Colic surgery could be as low as about, I'd say 10 to 15,000, but depending on the complications, they are known to go up to 20 and even 30,000. And just to give you some perspective with it, the surgery expenses are probably of all of them the least expensive thing. And a lot of it is the post-operative care that goes into them, and the sicker they are, the more money that's gonna be, and the longer they're in the hospital. And I think people also need to think about it. Like, we're always concerned about what the hospital costs are, but there's aftercare here, and there's veterinary visits after they come home. And so whatever numbers I'm giving you here in the hospital, you got to add several thousand dollars onto that. The other thing to throw in here is times have also changed, and I give those numbers out, and most hospitals want a deposit, and it could be anywhere from up to 50 to 60% of that higher end quote, and they want a deposit before they even do surgery. And upon discharge from the hospital, the payment's expected in full. And so I've no longer tried to assume that I can predict what a client may or may not be able to afford, because the word afford is a very relative term anymore. People will spend the money the way they want, and they'll find the money however they want to. So I don't try to put my personal bias on that anymore. I give people the numbers and say, this is what it is. And there's no exceptions. You need to have that money at that time. And we do have to treat this like a business. Clients don't like hearing that because they're stressed out and they think it's all, you know, that we're all money grab, but there's a lot of money that goes into caring for these horses, and there's a lot of staff that get involved with these. And so we've been burned through the years, and unfortunately it is, we do have to start treating these more like a business and not have emotional basis on it. But Dr. Rusby, are those quotes reasonable for your area as well?
Yeah, that's at 10 to 15,000 is what I was going to say as well, with some of the more, you know, if they don't have a lot of complications postoperatively, you can be closer to the 10,000 range. And then if you know, like it, we were talking about, if the horse needs some intestines resected, and then they have that higher, you know, higher complication rate afterwards, or they develop a complication just, you know, for any reason, which they certainly can do, then you're looking into some of the higher ranges for the estimate. And totally agree with you, Dr. Figaro. It is mostly the care that they're getting in the barn postoperatively, like the IV fluids and such, that is so expensive. And you know, and then the cost of the medical management is also quite high. As you mentioned, it can be up to 5 to 7,000 or more, depending. So that's why we are very motivated to, if they're in our care and we feel like they need surgery, we are motivated to, you know, what we don't want to do is have you all spend $5,000 to $7,000 on medical management, and then they need to go to surgery, ideally, because then you have to tack that on as well. So we would prefer to take things to surgery right away as soon as we get the suspicion that that's truly what the horse needs.
Dr. Rusby, Julie in Arizona, asked what supplies she should bring with her when traveling with her horse in case of a colic emergency.
Yeah. So I think, and, you know, and this is, and Dr. Fergar, if you want to jump in on this one, because I certainly am not on the field side of things very much. But I think if you're going out, if you're at the farm, seeing your horse that's colicking, things that I would think about so that I could talk to my veterinarian, or again, having a thermometer so that I can take a temperature, and maybe being able to take a heart rate, if you could learn how to do that at some point, would be helpful. Your veterinarian will probably give your horse some sedation before you ship to keep the horse safe and hopefully to keep you safe during the transport part of it. And you know, usually you can make it to the clinic based on what they provide you. I'm trying to think what else. Go ahead, Dr. Fergar, what do you think? What else?
Yeah,
do you
think the other thing I was going to throw in there, and this is again a loaded question with it, is do you have Banamine or Flix? Meglamine is the generic name for it. Some veterinarians want you to administer that beforehand, and some don't. Obviously, if we're in the field doing it, you know, we're going to probably want to give it to the horse ourselves so that we know. The problem we've found is sometimes people have already given 2 and 3 doses before you've even come out, and despite what horse people think, more is not better. It's either going to help or it's not going to help. And we don't go giving, as veterinarians, we don't give more Banamine when we can't control pain. We have to reach to other medications to do that, often sedatives, or as Dr. Rusby said, we have to then start thinking about whether surgery is the solution on this one. But I think having, in terms of transporting the horse and being around with the horse, I think those are the main things. You'll be surprised how many people do not know how to get a temperature on their horse, not to mention a heart rate. And that's a very simple thing, and you need to ask your veterinarian to show you how to do it.
Dr. Figaro, Chris in our live audience asks if it's true that a horse getting too hot in their winter blanket could cause them to colic.
Just thinking that through, you know, I can't say they can get dehydrated, and certainly horses get shocky and have secondary problems with dehydration. So yes, they could do that. I can't say that's a really common thing. I've seen horses sweating. They just wind up sweating and getting dehydrated, and you just find them drinking more on things if they have a normal, healthy system. But I don't want to say no to it, but I think it's less likely from that alone. And by the way, most horses actually don't need blankets if you don't clip them. Again, despite what horse people tend to think.
Dr. Rusby, Mary Beth in our live audience asks if the horse is having some questionable colic signs, such as maybe just mildly rolling a few times, is it okay to give some Banamine and wait to see if those are early signs are eliminated, or should they call the veterinarian right away?
Yeah, I think it's reasonable to give Banamine. The other thing that you could do is call your veterinarian and say this is going on and ask what they want you to do, ask for their advice. Sometimes they, you know, they might say give it a dose of Banamine, and then if they keep colicking, I'll come out. But then it's kind of on their radar. If it, you know, especially for mild colic signs, you know, if they just laid down or they flank watched a few times or did the Fleming response or something like that. If they're truly like persistently rolling and you know showing some more severe signs like that, I think it's likely that you're going to need your veterinarian to actually come out and see that horse at some point. But Yeah,
I think the other comment on that too is just making sure that even though they look good after you've given that, is to keep monitoring them. A lot of people are eager to get in bed because these typically always happen at night. It's rarely during the day, so it's always going to be the most inconvenient time. And it's really important to continue to monitor them because they will look good. Even the surgical ones will look good after you give Vanamine, but then it changes. And the next question is, when does it change? And the answer is yes. Some of that is, you know, 15, 20 minutes after you give it. Some of it's 2 hours down the road. Vanamine should last for low grade pain at least 12 to 24 hours. And so it does require a follow-up. And as said before, you now have monitoring systems and cameras, so it's a lot easier, or that means sometimes you have to camp out in the barn.
Dr. Ferraro, Carol in Pennsylvania wants to know if feeding a horse an unbalanced diet or too many supplements could cause colic.
Well, if we were going to, I don't mean to sound negative to the horse people because I'm a horse person as well, but we seem to love supplements. And if it was based on supplements alone, every horse would be, you know, colicking. Do I think unbalanced? I mean, I've seen malnourished cases and starvation cases. And interestingly enough, they don't colic as much as you think. The body does have a way of compensating. And unfortunately, it does take away from other stores and digest other things to basically feed the nutritional requirements. Now, that said, any nutritional change, any dramatic changes in feed, that's why we always talk about, again, horses are creatures of habit. If we do, you know, gradual transitions are important. And, you know, if we have individuals that like to constantly be shopping online and getting this supplement, then change to this, and then change to that, I don't think that's overly healthy for the horse. I don't want to say that that's the only reason why a horse colics, but I do think it plays a contributing factor in some cases.
Dr. Recipe, Chris in our live audience says if a 26-year-old horse with no history of colic in the past has a colic episode that requires surgery, would the prognosis typically be good or poor for a full recovery, especially considering the horse's age?
Yeah, so there was actually a recent paper that looked at colic surgery in geriatric horses or in older horses, and I think looking specifically at small intestinal lesions, because older horses they do get small intestinal lesions maybe a little bit more depending on what it is, depending on more than the younger horses, and they actually can do just fine. They do have a very favorable, you know, good prognosis for survival after surgery. So there's nothing about the age itself that makes them specifically do worse after colic surgery. It's more so a matter of, like, you know, if your horse was, you know, if you did a really great job of taking care of your horse and your horse is lucky enough to be like 33, then, you know, you're not going to have much. It's just a discussion about finances and how much longer, how many more good days the horse has left, even with, you know, without all the colic things going on. But yeah, they can do totally fine in terms of the surgery itself.
And I'll just add in there, because I've been a culprit of that for many years. I used to say, you know, you really want to put a 20-year-old on the table. And when that paper had come out, I had been doing more of those. And I remember the first horse I did that was like 27 or 28. And I said to the client, I said, I'm concerned. There's so many things that could possibly happen. Let me tell you, that horse lived another 5 more years. He was a pain in the ass then, and he still was afterwards, and we had to kick him out of the hospital because he was just being mean to all the technicians, and there's a reason he made it to, you know, 33 34. So I do think the financial aspects play a huge role, and making sure people have those resources to commit.
Speaking of finances, Dr. Ferraro, Megan in Texas asks if you can explain the role of insurance in covering medical and surgical colic management expenses.
Yeah, so It's changing, and I've been a huge advocate of insurances, but unfortunately what I have found over the past, particularly 5 years and maybe even less, is that the insurance coverages have not kept up with the advancing expenses that we're seeing in the industry, or how our veterinary industry is getting higher in terms of numbers. So you basically have two major plans, major medical and mortality. And if you've never used it in a horse, it's not the same in small animal and it's or companion animal. It's not the same in human medicine. Basically, your horse has to be valued at a certain amount. And I should have looked this up beforehand, but I want to say the value cutoff is they have to be at least 20,000 or more. And that's not a your decision. You either have to prove that they're worth 20,000 in a sale or show records or an appraisal or racing records, something like that. And they also, the cutoff on age plays a role too. I do know of some policies that cut off at 18. I just recently had a client had their horse, they were 20, and I haven't seen a 20-year-old insured in quite a long time now. So I don't know which carrier that was. So there's age restrictions, there's value restrictions on major medical. And the other thing is not all the plans, and I would say the majority of plans do not cover what we call routine procedures, vaccines, dewormers, even joint injections typically are considered routine maintenance, which I don't like that term, but that's the way the insurance company looks at that. So the way it works is you have a certain premium that you pay, and then for each claim, there's a certain deductible. The deductibles in years past were like around 500, and now I've heard more and more of them being closer to 1,000 to 1,200. And then no matter what your bill is, there's going to be a co-payment. So it's usually like a 60-40 or a 70-30 split. So I typically advise clients that even though you have this insurance, it's going to help you with the bill. They're not paying for the whole bill. You're still paying for a lot. And I this is where I also have to interject. Whatever plan you have with your insurance company is between you and your insurance company. Us veterinarians should not have to be a part of that. So in other words, you're still on the hook for paying the bill, and then the insurance carrier compensates you back. There are a lot of clients that seem to deal with it more on the human side, where they say, well, just wait till insurance pays you. And again, we have to treat our practices like they're businesses a little bit more. So then the other thing is most policies have some exclusions that are either pre-existing conditions, or most of the policies have exclusions for things like anything arthritis related, navicular related. If the horse has had colic surgery in the past, they will typically, and they've paid out on a claim, they will exclude for at least a year. I think you have to go at least a year, if not two, with no signs of colic before they'll remove the exclusion. I haven't had one of those now in the past year or two, so I don't know if that's changed, but that's the way it's been before. So you can't get major medical on all horses. There are going to be some horses that are going to say, we can't give you a major medical coverage. And that's based on numbers by the insurance companies. You can get mortality insurance on all horses. And the decision on a payout of mortality, there's still the value, there's still the age, although age is a little bit less stringent here. But with mortality, there are certain things they do not tell us veterinarians what we can and can't do. They basically say to you as the insured, you have to follow whatever the recommendations are your veterinarian is. So if Dr. Respy says your horse needs to go to surgery and you say, well, I don't want to take my horse to surgery, just go ahead and put it down, they're not going to pay a claim out on that. So the insurance company expects you to put some money up front to show good faith that the investment that they're putting in you is going the same way. So it's a little bit of, I don't want to call it a game, but you have to understand how that works. Most of us veterinarians help the clients, you know, through some of this, but it really, the onus is on you as the owner of the policy to kind of have all this. And then there are rider policies. There'll be supplemental plans that are there, such as they have surgical insurance. Now, surgical insurance is only for what happens in the OR. And again, as we all said, the expense of the surgery is actually probably one of the least in all the expenses, depending on what procedure's done. And so it's helpful, but it's not covering the whole thing. So I think the long and short of all these policies is that you need to anticipate that there's still going to be money up front. It's not like it's a free pass. You're still going to be paying money even though you've invested money ahead of time. So in some cases, I say to people, maybe it's not worth you having insurance in your situation. Maybe you need a rainy day fund and have, you know, a certain amount of money that's liquid sitting around for those cases. The only other thing I'll just briefly say, because I know I took up too much time, there are some supplements out there that actually have plans that cover colic surgery. It requires that you have your horse on that supplement for an entire year. It usually requires your veterinarian looking after them. On average, you're probably going to be spending $2,000 to $4,000 in supplement, you know, fees to then get a certain amount of money that they offer. I won't mention the brands on those, but you know, there are three that I know of that are out there, and that's not age dependent. Sorry, that was a long-winded answer, Haley.
No worries, we appreciate it. Dr. Rusty, Sue in California wants to know why some horses are more prone to colic when they might live in the same environment as others who seem healthy.
Yeah, this is, you know, that's a good question. And the answer is very multifactorial. So probably is maybe not the most satisfying answer ever, but basically there are a whole bunch of different reasons, you know, things that may factor into it, such as certain breeds, maybe more predisposed to certain types of colic, age of the horse, depending on what the pasture mates are. What types of horses your horse is living with, and you know, if their management varies, for example, things like deworming your horse can sometimes come into play with certain types of colic, and diet, you know, dental care, things like that we've already touched on a little bit. But really, there are a lot of different things that can come into it, and some of it are things we can't change, like, you know, just the breed and age of the horse, and their kind of their stress level, things like that.
Speaking of predisposition, Dr. Rusby, Mary Beth in our live audience asks if colic might be more common in mares.
Yeah, so it depends on what location you're in. So I'm in Central Kentucky. So where I'm at, absolutely the most common type of horse that we get for colic is a broodmare. So basically, foals are very cute, but they also wreak complete havoc in the abdomen. So there are all sorts of different types of colics that are specific to broodmares that can, you know, they cause problems in the late term gestation period, so when they're close to foaling, and also in that immediate postpartum period. There are just, that's like an, you know, at least an hour discussion in itself of all of the different ways that babies can kick holes and things and do little naughty things. So it's a good thing they're so cute. But yeah, so in this area, absolutely mares, yes. In other areas, like if we're talking about show horses and things like that, you know, I wouldn't say necessarily that they would be more predisposed to those types of colics that we're thinking about in like a non-broodmare versus a gelding or things like that.
Dr. Rusby, I'm curious, could you tell us the success rates of colic surgery on a pregnant broodmare? Is that typically a successful surgery?
Yeah, so it depends on a pregnant mare. So it depends on what they have, of course. But Usually they can do quite well. And again, in my area of Central Kentucky, as Dr. Fergara has mentioned, we get colics here very quickly compared to other areas in the country. And then that's why the research that comes out of the practices in Central Kentucky show very favorable survival rates, upwards of 90%. Because again, we just, we get colics very soon after the horses start, and then their owners in this area are very motivated to have their horses go to surgery if we think they need it. So those can do, you know, the most common type of colic that we see in this area in pregnant mares or in post-foaling mares is a large colon volvulus or a twist of their large colon. Those mares can do very well after surgery. You know, there are complications that we look out for, and that is a type of colic where they are prone to get it again. But they can, you know, 80% or so of those can will do well, at least 80 to 90%. The ones we see in our practice will survive. But that's kind of a specific type. Depends on what type of colic and when in their pregnancy we're cutting them and things like that.
Dr. Fergara, Dr. Rusby briefly touched on deworming, but Michelle in Kentucky asked if deworming a horse can put them at risk for colic. Should you deworm a horse with a history of colics differently than other horses?
So I think there's a couple of situations in that scenario. The horse has never been dewormed before, and let's say they're even a couple years old. Those are the ones you have to be really careful, because we do have, we have a lot of resistance to our dewormers, but we still have a couple heavy hitters that are out there. And what can happen, particularly in the first time deworming, and that can happen in weanlings or yearlings, that they'll do that, it does a massive kill of the of the adult worms, and then those all get trapped in a very select location of the intestinal tract. That's something that can be avoided. So if I have a horse I know has no deworming history, they're older, or even, you know, a weanling or a yearling, we do have certain protocols that we follow on those. In the meantime, I think you always have to remember that it doesn't matter what procedure you're doing on a horse. I've had horses colic after I did a joint injection on them. So, you know, anything that seems to just upset them, and the intestinal tract is the shock organ in a horse. So they're not always surgical in nature, but they definitely can be inflamed, irritated, get gassy, a combination of things. And those are obviously the more mild kinds. There are some other dewormers and some theories out there. I don't know that I want to say that it's end all be all, that certain dewormers can cause more frequently. I really have not seen that over the years. There's a lot of things on social media that post things, but I think there's judicious use of it and the appropriate use. I did hear somebody once tell me, it was from a pharmaceutical company, that had made a comment that deworming in a certain temperature made a difference. If it was super cold, that made a difference, or if it was the end of the day. But I don't know that I've seen anything statistically or anything in the research that's proven that. I don't know. Am I misspeaking, Dr. Rusby? Do you know something different than I know there?
No, not at all. I agree with everything you've said. And I would just emphasize again that the resistance to the dewormers has become very, very widespread, and is actually, it's a bit of a problem that we're facing in equine medicine. And so AAP has good protocols that you can talk about with your veterinarian to follow. And I believe that they're recommending, not maybe in the younger horses, but in older horses, you know, doing actual fecal exams on horses before and after deworming, and being a little bit more judicious about deworming the ones that are high shedders and things like that. So to try to do what we can to maintain the efficacy of the ones that we do have. So just kind of be mindful of that, in the future, the resistance.
And unfortunately, there are no new dewormers being made out there. I don't even know any in the pipeline. In my career of almost 30 years, I only know one new dewormer that came out on the market for horses.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Dr. Rusky, Christine in Washington asks why walking or even trotting a horse could be helpful for some types of colic, but not others.
Yeah. So walking is great for really most types of colics. The ones that they're very helpful for are like a gas colic, which Dr. Figueroa mentioned at the beginning is very common type of colic. So it just helps keep the motility up in the gastrointestinal tract and help them pass gas and potentially resolve some of their pain. Trotting horses, we do specifically for nephrosplenic entrapments of the large colon. So there is a ligament that passes from the left kidney to the spleen up high in a horse's abdomen. And the large colon, as I've mentioned, is one of those intestines in the horse that is not well attached to things. So it actually can move around a tremendous amount within the abdomen. And it can move off to the left and up so that it becomes stuck over top of this ligament. But sometimes if the entrapment isn't super tight, when you trot them, it can just kind of jiggle the large colon around and bounce it off of the ligament and then allow it to go back to its normal place. So that is why we usually give horses a medication called epinephrine for that as well, which causes the spleen to shrink and helps it also resolve. So that's why we trot horses with that specific type of colic, and walking in general can be helpful for passing gas.
Dr. Figueroa, Carla in South Dakota wants to know if senior horses with metabolic problems could be more prone to colic.
You know, the metabolic scenario has become really important, and because we have horses living a lot longer on things, it can in some cases, but I don't want to blame it on that exclusively. One of the things that we see in older horses from the surgical side is a condition called a strangling lipoma. It's a fatty tumor that likes to live in the abdomen. We see them in our dogs. They're usually under the skin. But in horses, imagine a golf ball sized mass on a string, and that's attached to a piece of intestine. And it can be in there for some time, could be years. And then for whatever one reason that day, it likes to tie things in a bow and cut off, you know, the blood supply and the intestines. And we do tend to think, I've never seen a lipoma in an emaciated horse. So there is a connection, although I don't want to say it's 100%, between, you know, our fat deposits and these horses having fatty tumors. Now, I'm not saying that just because a horse is obese or fat, which we have a lot of those in our populations, that they all have lipomas. But it does seem as if older horses are much more prone, and Dr. Rusby will agree with me. We see a late teenager horse that never colicked before and is having a severe colic. That's a surgical nature. Our number one differential is strangling lipoma, and particularly if they're Arabian.
Yeah, I agree. We also see a lot of saddlebred horses in this area, and they saddlebred horses have a large amount of fat deposits everywhere. So they get a lot of them too. So,
Dr. Rusby, Francis in Ireland asks if there is any link between gastric ulcers and colic.
Yeah. So gastric ulcers absolutely can make your horses colic. It's a very common cause of colic. We think about gastric ulcers a lot in the clinic when we have horses that colic repeatedly. So if they've come in for their second or third time in a recent period, like in a few months or something like that, when we have horses in the hospital, we usually hold them off feed and then usually end up recommend scoping or putting a camera down into their stomach to take a look and see if they have ulcers. So definitely that can make them painful. It's usually more mild colic signs rather than really overt, you know, like thrashing and rolling despite sedation and things like that. So those are the things that make us think about ulcers, and all sorts of different types of horses can get ulcers for many different reasons. It's a very common problem to have in horses. So yes, definitely they can common cause colic.
We're coming to the end of our time for tonight. So Dr. Bergara, my last question is going to be for you. It's from Rosemary in North Carolina, who would like to know when horse owners might want to consider euthanasia during a colic emergency. How can they decide when that might be the best option for their horse?
I mean, our job as veterinarians is to offer our clients what options A, B, and C are on the table. We are specifically trained not to tell you what would we do if it's our horse, because it's not fair for us to give you our emotional biasness on it. And I'm not going to tell you we don't get biased with our horses. Even though we don't own the horses, we get attached to them and we have our opinions with it. But we really are trying to stay unbiased, because it does have to be a you decision. What our job is to really help you see through. Here are your options. This is the cost it's going to look like. This is what the complications look like, and then help you make that decision. I will say there are a few caveats on that. Horses that have had a severe episode and have gone through a rupture of an intestine, usually it's the stomach that typically ruptures, but it can be other areas, and we know that ahead of time. We rarely don't recommend the person put them down. And in fact, I've gotten faster at doing that, because I've seen horses expire naturally on that, and it's not a pleasant experience, and I don't want the horse going through it. And one of the things in our oath is to help end pain and suffering, and so that's one of the things that we try to do. So I think this is part of the time where we have to be good customer service representatives to our clients, and we have to be advocates for our horses. And it's a balancing act, because again, we want to give our own personal bias, but we can't. So I've been doing it long enough. I have clients I've been working with for almost 30 years. And you know, I'm crying with them in making these decisions. I will typically give them, you know, a little bit of leeway to make decisions they want. If I think it's a decision I think it's absolutely wrong and inhumane or something like that, I will actually step up to the plate and say something like that. But otherwise, really, our goal is to try be as objective as possible and give them the best advice, because there are times that I would think an owner wouldn't try to go forward and do a surgery, and they've surprised me at what resources they've come up with. But I've also had ones where I have said to the client, it's time, and I'm sorry to be the one telling you that. I actually just did this last week. And it was a horse that already ruptured. And I said to them, and unfortunately I had to say it to him quickly. I said, I'm really sorry, but this is the time for the horse. And I really can't let you take too much time thinking about this. So I need you to say your goodbyes. And I need to put the horse down, because he's going to expire very soon here. And it's not what you want to see for the horse. And this was a client that I've known for many years, and I felt comfortable doing that. I can't do that with a person that I've never met before.
Well, that's all the time we have for tonight, but thank you, Dr. Bergara and Dr. Rusby, for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you to Care Credit for sponsoring this event. And finally, thank you to our audience for listening and sending in all of these questions. If you're listening to us after the live event as a podcast episode, please rate, review, subscribe, and recommend Ask the Horse Live to a friend. Until next time, from everyone at the horse, have a great night.